Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, zip up your leather pants, slap on the clown paint, and don't forget to eat something light as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about monsters, anomalies, and legends. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove.
And I am Mark Matzke, your co-host.
This is the official podcast of Small Town Monsters. You can learn more about the show at monsteropolis.podbean.com or on smalltownmonsters.com, go to the podcasts page where you'll find info on this very show as well as our old show, Sass What. But this week we are continuing the alien abduction theme by discussing the lasting effects or the after effects of alien abduction. And like I said last week, this is not a topic I particularly enjoy talking about or getting into. We've talked about Invasion on Chestnut Ridge being one of the creepiest interviewed, Barry Clark's interview on Invasion on Chestnut Ridge being one of the creepiest, things that we've talked about. And I think it's hinted at in the movie, you know, that there were physical and mental ramifications of Barry's. I guess maybe we should start with Barry. As long as we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, we should.
Barry Clark in
the
film.
That's the weirdest, the weirded outest I've ever felt on a shoot.
Yeah.
Is sitting there with
him. I think that's the weirdest I've ever felt when it comes to anything paranormal in terms of listening to someone relate their experience. I've never been that creeped out by what was being told to us. Like, I was actually like, is something this guy's telling us going to rub off on us? And next thing I know, I'm going to. So Barry was a UFO investigator along the Chestnut Ridge with Stan Gordon during the 1970s. He was investigating a series of unusual events at a farm, the Bell Farm, which was an alias, right? That wasn't actually the name of they just called it the Bell Farm.
Yeah, I've heard two sides of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned this. Mm-hmm. So he was investigating a series of unusual events at the Bell Farm. They witnessed a weird sort of a multi-light UFO incident, and it began to sort of follow Barry. He began to have missing time experiences and other unusual things happened to him. I don't know that there was anything physical then that early in the game, was there?
No.
It was all mental, right? And then he had a grandson who was living with him who would have been very young, and his grandson started to tell him that he was being visited by men who came through a hole in the ceiling at night. And they were kind of sharing experiences, not together, but they were relating similar things that were happening to them that seemed to happen to both of them. And eventually Barry asked us to turn the cameras off, and he went on to relate some side effects or physical effects that these things were having on him. One of them was deeply disturbing, that we aren't at liberty to talk about, but it was something that had happened to him physically, that resulted in a trip to the hospital and, unexplainable if as he is relating it, if what he is relating to us is exactly what happened, it, to me, it's not something you can just explain away through mundane means, or even like some sort of physical malady. This is something very sinister that he described to us. So, and it was just a disturbing story. And honestly, it probably would have changed the tone of that movie completely if we had included that story. But that has always stuck with me as being the reason I really hate abduction stuff.
And not the kind of thing you would just tell a group of random strangers either. Mm-mm. For why? It doesn't...
No. It's not a...
The type of revelation...
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were personal.
For context, we were crammed in a tiny room. It was basically a mud room, mm-hmm. at an old house. And there was six of us. It was him and probably like six of us in there, seven of us in there. Jason wasn't in there. he was hiding upstairs, trying not to move because he was afraid the microphones were going to pick it up. But we were all crammed in this tiny room listening to this man very unburdened his soul almost to us about his abduction, or, you know, I guess abduction like sort of experiences.
I know we've mentioned this before, but the striking thing was that at the end of all of that, he indicated to us that he was maybe thinking about getting back into
UFO research.
Yeah.
Yeah, paranormal research.
Which he had stepped away from for some time.
And burned his files. That's what I always come back to. He kept very studious, like very, very cataloged everything. And then Stan told us he burned it all.
Ouch.
Just burned it all.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah. So the idea of the alien abduction subject is creepy on its own, even if people are just relating creepy stories to you. But when you get into whether or not these things actually have lasting effects or even temporary physical effects afterward, that's where the whole thing takes on a new, creepier, more sinister sort of tone for me. So today in my research, Roger Lear is the name that I kept coming back to. I don't know if you came across that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Roger Lear. I'm going to introduce Roger via a audio clip that I found. And this is from an old, apparently like a TV show, but we're gonna play it.
Tangible evidence that he claims is proof of an alien intelligence visiting Earth. Dr. Roger Lear is a surgeon from Southern California who has been performing operations on patients for over 30 years.
So far, 8 surgeries have been performed, and with the 8 surgeries, we have removed 9 objects. The commonality, of course, is that all the individuals are subjects of the alien abduction phenomena.
In 1996, he performed one of the first surgeries to remove an alien implant from the jaw of an alleged abductee. What you are about to see is the actual video of the first implant being removed.
Well, that's disgusting. Grief.
Yeah.
So Roger Lear, there is a ton of back and forth on Lear online. Especially, you know, like most people claim he's a hoaxer or he bends the truth to fit his will. There's a Jeremy Corbell documentary about Lear that I haven't seen. It's actually the only Corbell documentary I haven't seen yet. Maybe it has a little bit less slow motion shots of him walking toward the camera like a cool guy. Mark just gave me the most disapproving look. It was right up there with never mind. Okay, so so Lear seems to be a very, very controversial figure in ufology. Are you still shaking?
No.
So Lear, and then the other name I kept coming across is John Mack. Mm-hmm. Mack is on the psychological end of things, and Lear is on the physical end of things. So Lear, what did you find about Lear in your no doubt reading 400 books or
the yes? Well, it comes down to this. Now, the thing that jumped out at me this time around in Lear's case is that he's a podiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, that is what I think gives him access to being able to surgically remove things from people's bodies. Mm-hmm. But just that whole idea is so out there to me that, you know, knowing what I know, which admittedly isn't a whole lot about the medical field, but how does one schedule implant removal if you're a podiatrist? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It yeah. just is kind of fantastic. But the fact of the matter is they seem to have removed objects from people's bodies that once analyzed are just strange and unusual, although typically made of elements that, all right, you can identify. I mean, it's not like they're made out of.
Well, there is there. So I used to read a lot of L.A. Marzulli, not necessarily because I believed what he was mm-hmm. saying, but I thought that the writing was so interesting, and mm-hmm. like some of the things he said were just fascinating stories. And I do remember he talked to, I think it was Lear, unless there's someone else on that same, there might be another implant removal specialist out there. But one of the objects they removed actually seemed to be made of, it had like some sort of electronic or seemed to be transmitting something. And it also seemed to be made of some sort of alloy or whatever that only came from like a meteorite. Which was one of the strange. Have you ever heard about that?
No. Okay. No, that's interesting.
It'd be funny if I'm completely misremembering this and I'm inventing it.
It's better.
Spot.
It's probably
you'll
better.
You'll never know, listener. I might be making this up right now. But the idea of there being a specialist in alien implant removals alone kind of gives you insight into how large scale the abduction phenomenon has gotten. Like, I mean, I actually was reading today, it's shrunk a lot. There's far less people claiming to be abductees today than there were, you know, a decade ago.
Yeah, and while we're talking about important researchers, I guess, mm-hmm. into this, one other name we should probably mention is Bud Hopkins, mm-hmm. because you mentioned Mac, and he's very much kind of the psychological end of things, although treating them as real experiences. Bud Hopkins was sort of the materialist representative, or in other words, he was taking the abductee stories at face value and did a lot to just, I think, be a listening ear to those who were claiming these experiences, and wrote numerous books. Mac did as well. I don't think Mac was quite as prolific as Bud Hopkins was. But of course, then you have Lear as part of that.
So
Raymond Fowler also, he does the Andreessen affair, which is a whole other, we didn't even mention the Andreessen case on the other episode, but
no, and we need to at least get to Strieber too.
Yeah,
but I did find an article on MUFON about implants, and this is talking about a series of surgeries that Lear performed on various alien abductees. The findings of these implant surgeries are highly unusual, reported Dr. Lear. In all these cases, there was virtually no inflammatory response. This is not the usual finding in foreign tissue reactions. Normally, foreign bodies embedded in tissue result in some type of acute or chronic inflammatory response and may include fibrosis or cyst formation. Such was not the case here. Pathology reports of the first two surgeries revealed that the metallic objects were encased in a very dense, tough, gray membrane consisting of, I'm not even going to try to read those words. More simply, blood, protein, and skin cells are usually found in the superficial layer of the skin. The tough biological cocoons encasing the implants were also found to contain nerve propriocepters, nerve and pressure cells of the wrong tissue type for that part of the body. These implant cocoons also fluoresced a bright green color in the presence of an ultraviolet light source. The implants from the two women from the second set of surgeries did not exhibit metallic properties like the implants from the first set of surgeries. In fact, the spheroid whitish objects did not contain the tough biological outer jackets or the fluoresce from a UV light source. It goes, there's a whole article about this on MUFON about alien implants. And in fact, if you just Google search alien implants, it's one of the first entries you'll find on Google, which is how I do the bulk of my research for this show.
A bit of trivia on the implant issue is that funding for analysis of the extracted objects was provided largely by Robert Bigelow's National Institute for Discovery Science, or NIDS, which would go on to be involved in the Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah. Psychological side of things. Well, Strieber, there were some physical after effects with Whitley Strieber, weren't they? Or claimed physical after effects. Can we talk about Strieber real quick? Because that's a good spot to get back into that.
Sure. Well, let me just ask you, do you recall the first time that you saw the cover of the book Communion?
I didn't see the book cover. The only thing I know of Communion is that like 88? What year did that come out?
Here, we got it. Yeah, 87? Yeah.
Okay, so this hit me at a point in life when my mom was grocery shopping at Bueller's in Dover, and Bueller's had a massive VHS rental store inside of the grocery store, and in the video store was a big display of like probably 20 or 30 televisions. And they were all like lined on this wall. They were like mounted on the wall, and they weren't big TVs, but they all played the same thing. And as a kid, there was something about that was super creepy.
Yeah.
And I can remember going in there once, and whoever was running the video store was playing Communion, and I watched like 2 minutes of it and left the video store, which is unheard of for me. And I might never have gone back after that, but that is my sole knowledge of that movie. I've never watched it. I just remember as a kid going into the video store and someone was playing it, and it horrified me. Yeah. And it said there was a little lower third on the TV that said Communion, which is how I remember that it was that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when the book came out, I could not wait to read it. And I did, I ripped through it. But at night when I was get done reading it, I would turn the book upside down so I wouldn't have to look at the alien gray face on the front. It just unnerved me.
Called Communion?
That's an excellent question. I think it has to do with Strieber's overall viewpoint, which is that he, in subsequent books and in starting with that particular one, he feels that the interaction with the aliens is preparing humanity for some sort of breakthrough. And that, of course, you know, the subtext when you use that word is a religious union with the divine. And I think he's pretty much coming at it from the viewpoint of that the aliens represent some type of divine or spiritual force that's acting upon humanity to kind of push them into a new leap.
So the red flag with Strieber is that he was a fantasy fiction novelist even before he wrote Communion, which he claims is a true event. What were some of the physical or mental ramifications?
Yeah, he claimed several abductions and examinations. Mm-hmm. Kind of a lifelong involvement with mysterious events. Not necessarily. I mean, I think he kind of ends up interpreting everything in light of the abduction experience. So even just weird things he would chalk up to like a screen memory, if you will, of some interaction with a alien being. And he was prolific in writing about it. I mean, in addition to Communion, he wrote Transformation in 88, Breakthrough in 95, The Secret School in 96, The Communion Letters in 97, Confirmation in 98, The Key in 2001, and then Solving the Communion Enigma in 2011, and a book with religious studies scholar Jeffrey Kripal, Supernatural, A New Vision of the Unexplained in 2016.
It's like George Lucas. He's got a
yeah.
He's got the gravy train. it's like Seth Breedlove, a small town monster. yeah, but the psycho. So when you get to the psychological end of things, the name, like I said, the name that kept coming up was Mac's name. Who it's David, right? Is that what it was?
John Mac,
who died in 2003, I think. Yeah, it was,
fairly actually. Recently.
Yeah, he was 74. I guess he was struck and killed by a drunk driver. But he was a very well known psychologist or psychiatrist with Harvard psychiatrist. I found an interview here. I just grabbed a couple pieces from it that I thought could be interesting to read. But before we get to that, do you want to give an overview of him and what it was that he did? If you don't have that in front of you, I do.
Yeah, you should probably do that.
Okay. Okay, this is coming from Psychology Today, from an article that was published in 1994, written by Jill Nymark. Again, this is Psychology Today. The article is called The Harvard Professor and the UFO. One of the best and the brightest, a Pulitzer Prize-winning psychiatrist has made himself into a high priest of what is politely called the abduction phenomenon. He insists it's a form of cosmic correction of our Earth-polluting ways. In a tiny utilitarian... Utilitarian office at Cambridge. I can read that. My brain was not allowing my tongue to spit it out. At Cambridge Hospital, a nondescript cubicle on the third floor overlooking the parking lot, Harvard psychiatrist John Mack is seeking God. And the way this 64-year-old Pulitzer Prize winner is going about it is truly unprecedented. He has become a kind of healer to a whole underground of Americans who claim they have been abducted by aliens in UFOs. And I've also got, a piece of an interview that was conducted with him. I'm not going to read the whole interview, but there's some parts here that'll give you insight into what he did. Let's talk about your own personal evolution from perhaps skepticism to belief. Mac answered, "When I first encountered this phenomenon, or particularly even before I had actually seen the people themselves, I had very little place in my mind to take this seriously. I, like most of us, were raised to believe that if we were going to discover other intelligence, we'd do it through radio waves or through signals or something of that kind. The idea that we could be reached by some other kind of being, creature, intelligence that could actually enter our world and have physical effects as well as emotional effects was simply not part of the worldview that I had been raised in. So that I came very reluctantly to the conclusion that this was a true mystery. In other words, that I did everything I could to roll out other sources or sexual abuse. Some of these people are abused, but they're able to distinguish clearly the abduction trauma from other forms of abuse. Some forms of psychosis or people making up stories, I could reject that on the basis that there was no gain in this for the vast majority of these people. I've now worked with over 100 experiencers intensively, which involves an initial 2-hour or so screening interview before I do anything else. And in case after case, I've been impressed with the consistency of the story, the sincerity with which people tell their stories, the power of feelings connected with this, the self-doubt, all the appropriate responses that these people have to their experiences." It's really interesting. I need to post a lot of this on our show notes. But some of it goes back to Betty and Barney Hill. If you want to go back to like the cycle, because we never got into, you know, like what the lasting sort of effects were on Betty and Barney Hill and how psychologically, it seemed to leave some scars.
Yeah. And that's, one of the ways that, you know, obviously it takes a toll on people, and it can even break into a darker direction than that, where people report not only having to deal with the psychological damage and think of this in negative terms, but then either have repeated abductions or are visited by other forces as well in the wake of their abduction. And there, you know, I'm talking about things like either paramilitary groups, Men in Black, and in some cases, it's almost like poltergeist type activity that seems to be unleashed once the abduction has taken place. One of the resources that I relied on in getting ready for today was Jerome Clark's Encyclopedia of UFOs. And he has this amazing chart of abduction experiences and pulls it all together and creates some commonalities. And what's really, really eye-opening to me is that there are psychological after effects of an abduction, but it can go one of two ways. It can be really negative and something that you have to try and live with, and that kind of pulls you down and makes you look at the world in sort of a distrusting fashion. But there's also a decent percentage of abductees who almost view this as a positive thing that happened to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that, even if they don't come out and say it's a positive thing, that the ability of some people to deal with what they went through in a way I wouldn't expect. Travis Walton actually comes to mind, because it's a strange thing to me that he was at that conference signing illustrations of himself being carried off into a ship for what went on to become a very traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. I thought of like a Vietnam veteran, like my dad or someone, like they're not going to go sign prints of some of the things they might have gone through. So that is it's a stranger aspect to this, and maybe it raises some red flags for some people. But the abduction, when you get into the abduction phenomenon as a whole, I feel like with most of these paranormal subjects we've discussed, it ends up raising far more questions than it does answer anything. I mean, there's no answers to the UFO question when it comes to the abduction phenomenon. Yeah. It actually just raises numerous questions about the entire thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. So here's the commonalities mm-hmm. that Clark comes up with. Immediate after effects, largely psychological, weeks or months later, the puzzling blankness, he calls it, of missing time may begin to fill in with nightmares and maybe fragments of memory.
Barry suffered that missing time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They feel compelled to return to the abduction site if that wasn't home, which for many it was. But if it's like a campground, they feel a need to go back there, even if they're terrified once they get there. Also, general anxieties like fears of being alone in the dark or driving a certain stretch of road, specific situations like a doctor's appointment, you know, that mimic an examination, obviously, or a large-eyed animal being in proximity to one. And so what you see then is a change of lifestyle that can happen. And that's what I meant kind of by the positive side. It says one striking long-term after effect is a change of lifestyle, occasionally a turn for the worse, but usually, he says, positive in nature. With the abductee acquiring new interests, greater curiosity, may give up a job, unhealthy diet, other bad habits like smoking, seeking work that includes interaction with people, and increased spiritual awareness. So, the impulse to, like you said, turn it into something positive, perhaps. Certainly you see that in Whitley Strieber. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could be criticized in somewhat obvious ways, I suppose, for turning that into a publishing monolith at this mm-hmm. point. He sold so many. But I think, I really think, having read and listened to him, that he considers himself more of an interpreter of these events and in sort of a spiritual fashion. Not that I necessarily agree with his conclusions, yeah. But I think that it doesn't seem to me that his motivations are make as much money as possible.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's nice that it is for him,
yeah.
But he's at the forefront, I think, of making it less of an intrusion on his life and being open to the experience, trying to really figure out what does this mean to him.
We're going to bring on Michael Huntington to talk about the abduction subject. I'm joined today by Michael Huntington, a good buddy, a relative genius when it comes to the paranormal field. He's always had one of my favorite sort of outlooks on the subject, and I don't say that about many people. So, Michael, thanks for taking a minute out of your busy day to talk to me.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the kind words. The feeling is certainly mutual. I do appreciate that. Alien abduction is anything you want to ask me. I can offer my opinion, but as far as answers, I don't know if I can provide answers.
Regarding, what about John Mack? Can you talk about, like, we already kind of like introduced who he was and like what his career entailed, but like, what is the read on the work he did, you know, by most ufologists today? Like, is it a respected sort of look into the subject, or is it, you know, laughed at?
Well, he's certainly respected within the UFO community. I think more so for his courage than his research. He was involved with the aerial school, the Ruha Zimbabwe case, where a lot of kids saw, an object back in the 60s. But he's more so respected for the fact that, you know, he was a Harvard professor who was sort of being disciplined for his interest into the subject. Mm-hmm. And he fought the academic establishment in order to be able to legitimately look at the subject. So he's as a hero, I think, more so than for his body of research, because he was really one of the first legitimate Ivy League, sort of guys to the UFO subject credibly.
Sure, sure. Final sort of outlook on the abduction subject, as it stands today. It seems like it's become less, I hate to use the word popular, because that doesn't seem like the right word, but that's the only word that springs to mind, is popular. Like, it seems like the abduction phenomena is not as popular as it was a few years ago. Like, what is your, opinion on why that might be?
I guess by popular, we sort of judge what's popular within the, paranormal world by what's being focused on in the media.
Sure.
And certainly the abduction phenomena is not really focused on in the media. I think when it comes to like Hollywood making movie representations, I think it's probably more so now dealing with, abduction type stuff, mm-hmm. than it has been in the past. But as far as research and the focus on the media, there's no abduction television shows or whatever. I don't think there really can be, but I don't think that abduction claims have necessarily gone down. In fact, I think within the UFO community, people that call themselves experiencers, people who are believers and they believe that they have not only had an experience, like a sighting, but that they are that sort of next level person who has had, long-term visitations and possibly abductions throughout their life. The idea of the experiencer has sort of really taken hold, and it's a class, it's an identifier within itself.
Right.
Within the community. So I think that a lot of people are identifying themselves as experiencers, and they're organized and Every UFO convention now has some sort of experience or encounter group.
Sure.
And people that specialize in hypnotic regression, and those sessions occur. So, I don't know if the popularity necessarily has gone down. I think it's just more established, I think.
Interesting. Okay. That's a cool way of putting it. I hadn't really thought of it in that context. It seems like you hear less about it, but I think some of that might have to do with the fact that the disclosure movement is so mainstream right now. Maybe it just mutes the sort of abduction side of things a little bit.
Yeah, as with every, you know, paranormal subculture or, you know, paranormal, you know, oriented group, you do have you know, different peaks of interest over the years, you know. Yeah. And yes, the disclosure stuff, you know, the government cover up and uncovering that has certainly dominated ufology for the past, 15 years or whatever. Everybody's caught up into the intrigue of that. But
sure,
things change. And I'm sure there will be another wave of interest in abductions. It'll just take another, communion type book to come out to get everybody into that again.
Yeah. All right, Michael, thanks so much for taking a couple of minutes out of your day to talk to me. And we'd love to get you on the show here at some point to have a full length conversation about some of this stuff. So.
Hey, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. Thanks for talking with me. I appreciate your kind words as well.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Thanks to Michael for coming on the show. So Mark, why don't you wrap us up on this particular side of the abduction subject?
I think, you know, we have to start with the conclusion, which is we just don't know what people are experiencing. But what we can know is that many people who claim the experience have been changed by it. And that change can happen in essentially one of two ways. It can ruin your life. It can cause you to distrust everything and live in fear of your own memories and avoid going places, avoid going out, and thinking there's no one that you can share your story with. Or you can be changed by it for the positive. And I've listed some of those reasons as some of the effects of that. What we haven't even gotten into is numerous reports of people who claim that the abduction experience or just exposure to a UFO healed them. And that's not huge. You know, that's largely the work of Preston Dennett. He's compiled around 300 cases where either people who are abductees or who are even just hit by a beam from a UFO were healed of some physical malady, which is a whole other issue, of course. But what it serves to show is that there's not, even though there seems to be a uniform abduction experience, and we detailed that on the last episode of, you know, shorthand, you're taken aboard a craft, examined, and taken back home, the lasting effects of that are not uniform. It just depends on the person. It can make you frightened of life, or it can make you better. And that just leads to more questions.
If you like the show, leave us a rating and review on iTunes. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, and at monsteropolis.podbean.com or at smalltownmonsters.com on the podcast page. We're back next week. Catch us then. Catch us running. Gonna have to cut out.
Catch us outside.
Catch us running.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.